Well, how are we, everybody? It's good to hear. You know, I thought about what I should say just to start off with, and I don't want to upset anyone. No, really, I don't. I thought I should say something, but it's pretty shocking in a way that I even have to bring it up as an example. But so don't be alarmed or anything. Okay, it's just, I got this friend. That's not the shocking part. It's just, I've got a couple of friends. One friend, okay, I've had since school. We have a bit to do with each other every now and then. The shocking part about this is my friend is not even in the truth. And he brings me out. He does, really. Emotions, like, what do I have to do just to get him to see that his life is on the road to destruction? He goes all these emotions, like, what do I have to do just to get him to see that his life is on the road to destruction? He's going nowhere. And he's about, you know, he's not quite young, he's about my age. He's about 35 years old. What really gets me is how inept and how ineffective and just how blooming hopeless mortality is. Anyway, so if God were here, if God was standing right here, he would know exactly what to say. Maybe he'll never come to the truth, I don't know. But I'd have a better chance if I was immortal, wouldn't you reckon? I mean, I would. And what we want to talk about tonight is this idea of immortality, because we all want immortality. That's what I'm supposing. It was just a simple presupposition. Everybody here wants immortality. Particular, very specific and narrow way of getting immortality. And that's what we want to discuss this evening. So who's got the buttons? Just flick one over, Phil. I probably missed one already. Next flick. So that's us today. There we are. I know you all feel 6 foot tall and bulletproof, but that's your life as is today, biblically written down. We're nothing. It's pretty dismal, isn't it, when you think about that? And you have to ask yourself, now ask yourself this question right now. Immortality is like a destination, as was the promised land, like you've been learning about with Elijah and Moses. It's a destination. And we want to make sure we're going to end up there. But you've got to go the right way. So just ask yourself, like, consciously ask yourself, am I going the right way in my life? Because just because you're sitting here, nestled in, snuggled up, with a bunch of Christadelphians, doesn't necessarily mean that you are actually heading in the right direction. Now, that's a fair question to ask, isn't it? Am I going the right way? Because I want to end up in a place with a dynamic, powerful, incredible body of immortality. That's what I actually want. And another question you could ask yourself is, why do you, or why do I want that as well? But ask yourself, am I going the right way? And if I'm heading in a certain direction, how do I know it's the right way? How do I know I'm on the right track? It's a fair question, because Thomas asked the Lord that. Lord, how can we know the way? Remember that question? Now, just flick back if you have turned away from it. Back to Exodus 33 and 34, because this way was revealed to Moses. Now, there's a lot going on in these chapters, 33 and 34. Okay, but subliminally, at least one of the levels going on is Moses gets to understand the way to go if he wants to get himself and all of Israel to the promised land. Moses is being told that, and obviously for us, we can see in these words, therefore, the message is how to get to immortality. Now just think about this. Here he is. Moses is He's pretty upset because he's caught them all worshipping the golden calf. He's done all this work for him. He smashed the tablets again. He's had to go back up the hill just before he does. And he's pleading with God because he said, God said, get out of my road. I'm going to obliterate all Israel. Now, what did Moses do? Just imagine this is one big happy study group. And we're all feeling like answering questions and really relaxed. And it doesn't matter if I get it wrong because Matt's not going to say, you idiot! It's not the right answer. I probably won't say that. He prayed for Israel. Even more, what else did he do? He didn't just pray for them. What did he do? Exactly. He threw himself down and said, no, God, don't kill them. Kill me instead. Blot me out of your book. Put Elijah right beside him. What would Elijah have done at that time? Get off the ground, will you? Get out of his road. Let him go. They deserve it. That's how Elijah would have reacted. But I don't want to be hard on Elijah. Because Moses had already had 40 years of learning. He'd already spent 40 years in the wilderness. Poor Elijah was trying to learn these things on the trot as he was going. And it was difficult. And we'd look at him and think, man, why didn't you get the point? I mean, it was 15 years after he heard the still small voice, heard the same proclamation that Moses had on Horeb. It was way, way down the track after that, but he started to do it. Walk alongside Elisha and say, it's good to be talking, isn't it? And he didn't like that very much. He said, go away, go away. And Elisha said, no, I'm coming with you. And he kept trying to get rid of him. And in the end, he sort of got used to the idea, touchy-feely Elisha, always wanted to hug him. Elijah's not like that, but he got used to it in the end. And in the end, he became like a true man. He started to show Elisha what he really was. Here they are at Bethel. There they are at Jericho. Here they are at Bethel. There they are at Jericho. You've got to look after them when they're gone. He was learning as he went. If I tell you something tonight, you might be interested. Thanks. What a concept. But you might not do it tonight. Monday's going to come. Monday's going to come at school, uni, and someone's going to be saying to you, you're an idiot. Where do you think you're going? Why are you acting like that? That's not going to get you anywhere. Are you going in the right direction? So here's Moses. This has just happened. He's tried to save Israel. God says, I'm not going to destroy him now. But now he's got this, he's this perplexed situation because maybe God's not going to go up with us. If he's not going up, I'm not going up. The deal is off. And what he does, let's just read this verse. Verse 12 of chapter 33, Moses said to the Lord, said to Yahweh, see, thou sayest to me, bring up this people. But thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, we have a good relationship, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way. Now mark that down. If you're not taking notes, take notes. If you are taking notes, mark it down. Show me now thy way. And I believe what Moses was saying was, show me what you've got. Prove to me. Prove, show off a bit, God. Prove to me that you can. Prove to me. Here we are. Prove to me that you can get us. All this group, here we are, Israel, to the promised land. How are we going to get there? Show me your muscles. Like, if I asked, like, who do you reckon here would have the biggest muscles? Who? I reckon you're right. It's got to be Luke. Has to be. Now, if I said to Luke, show us your best qualities, Luke, where is he anyway? I hate paying out someone I can't see. What would you say, Luke? If I said to you, show me your best qualities, what have you got, mate? Like, as an advertisement? I'll just have a drink while you're thinking. Nothing. He'd say, well, I can do this. I've got this IQ. I've got this athletics like you wouldn't believe. Like, I can run, jump, fish, fight. I can just do everything. I can do the lot. So he'd show me all the great qualities he got. But see, Moses was looking for something physical like that. But like left-fielded, God didn't show him anything like that except that bright light which he shielded him from, covered him with his hand. In fact, God says to Moses, here it is, here's the glory, and he declares all these moral qualities. Now that's got to be a little bit, what's he getting at? Verse 5 of chapter 34, when Yahweh descended in the cloud, and he stood within there, and he proclaimed the name of Yahweh. And Yahweh passed by before him and proclaimed, Yahweh, Yahweh El, merciful and gracious and long-suffering and abundant in goodness and truth and keeping mercy for thousands, as Deuteronomy says, thousands and thousands of generations, forgiving iniquity, transgression and sin, but I only get angry for a few generations. And that's what he said to Moses. Now, what did all that mean? Moses wants to see immortality, and what God was showing him was how to get it. Now, write that down. He wanted to see immortality, and God was showing him, young people, how to get it. He was showing him the way to get immortality. Now, if I were God, or if I were immortal, I don't want to be disrespectful, but if I were immortal, I would have said, okay, you want to know how I'm going to get you there? Watch this. You think about the great things you could do if you're immortal. You would, you know, some uninhabited area of the earth, you could just go, well, you wouldn't even have to go like that because you're immortal. You just go wink or something and there'd be this huge earthquake or a tsunami, or you could take him, that's small stuff. You could take him out into outer space, right to the edge of the galaxy, and you could say, do you want to see me annihilate a galaxy? You see that one out on the edge, on the rim of space, way out there? Like, no one's even discovered that yet, so no one's going to miss it. I just created it because I like the way it sparkles. Watch this. Can't see it anymore, can you? Now how I did that? Antimatter. You know what antimatter is? No, so I don't really know much about antimatter either, but it sounds impressive, doesn't it? If you're immortal, you'd know what it was. This is true. Like this physics, whatever they are, the people that are a lot smarter than I'll ever be, who understand about this stuff, but they can't create it, and they can't manipulate it, but you could if you're immortal, young people. Do you want that sort of power? See, this is immortality. We're weighed down with that. That wasn't funny. And for example, if I got the head of a pin, I held it there in my hand, and I heated it to the core of the sun's temperature, it would kill everybody within a 1,500 kilometre radius. Now I ask you a question. If you're immortal, could you swallow that pin? The answer is yes. You could do that. That's the sort of power we're talking about. What's her name? We have to carry her out. She's obviously never thought about this. I said if I had this power, this is what I would... Right? And Moses was expecting... Anyone know about black holes? This is serious. They say the... For instance, give you an idea of the intensity of a black hole, okay? The sun is, I think it's around about 1,380,000 kilometres diameter across. If it collapsed into a diameter of only 6 kilometres, which would nicely fit into like Rathmines... environ area, that type of density would weigh more per teaspoon than Mount Everest. Right? Now, over the gates of hell, apparently, is this sign, which we don't even believe in hell, but the sign says, the sign says, abandon all hope, all ye that enter. Now, you could take that sign, hang it over the door of a black hole, because you don't want to mess with these things. In fact, as you get closer and closer to a black hole, I'm just trying to describe this as immortality, okay? As you get closer and closer, there's a certain proximity of closeness to a black hole which you don't want to cross. It's called the event horizon. Ever heard of the event horizon? 1 inch over that event horizon, you're gone. It will suck you in. Nothing can escape. Light even gets drawn into it. Now I've got a question for you. Can an immortal stand on the event horizon and taunt the black hole? That massive tug-of-war going, who wins? God wins every time. Now, we know that in our galaxy, for those who believe in black holes, they're out there, but if you're immortal, you could create them. Think about that type of power. That is immortality, young people. Now, you want that sort of power, but you have to ask yourself, from Moses' position, what would I do with that power? From Elijah's position, what would I do with that power? Here's another one. God's a mathematician. If you're immortal, this ordinary, everyday, garden variety light bulb, okay? They're fluoro, so they don't work. But you know the one with a little bit of wire across the middle of it, the filament? Every single minute, the amount of electrons that go through that filament of the light bulb, every minute, does anybody know how many there are? Exactly, so I don't have a clue. But I've been told that the amount of electrons that flow through a normal, everyday, garden variety filament of a light bulb is the same number of drops of water that go over Niagara Falls in a century. I know, it nearly does my head in thinking about it too. And I've got to ask you, does God know how many electrons that is? He does. He counts them in his spare time, young people. He understands exactly how many that is. Or what about, it should cause you to pause and consider that there's 10,000 trillion words that have been spoken by humans since the dawn of creation. I don't know how they worked it out. 10,000 trillion words. Does God know them? He does. He knows every one of them. In fact, he can recite them all from memory backwards. He knows them all. I'm talking about immortality. Young people, we need that sort of power. We want to live. That's really living. I want that energy. I know you want that energy too. You want to be living in that environment forever. What would you give that up for in this life? What could this life possibly give us that we would actually give up a great, great, great opportunity like that? Like, really? What would we give it up for? This doesn't make you pause and think, because I think to myself, and I'm saying this for you, if you had 10 minutes with God and you could go across the other side of eternity and just sit with him and talk with him about immortality, about your life and about the power that he's got and what he has in store for you, I believe that that would change your life forever. I believe nothing. It would be a dramatic change and it would be a total change, and nothing would ever be, ever in your life be the same. Every waking moment, every minute of the day, every single hour, every attitude, every opinion you ever formed of anybody else would be with that in mind, of that place and that time and that condition that you want to be in. And everything in your life would be wanting and making sure that you are on that path and going in that direction to end up in that place. Am I right or not? I believe it would be dramatic. And yet we've got all these problems. And yet we know we need that sort of power. Young people, who would you give that sort of power to? Have a look at the person next to you. Would you give it to them? Neither would I. Would you give it to you? Would you give it to me? No, of course you wouldn't. Why not? Well, yeah, but that's nothing wrong with wanting it. Exactly. We've got to be prepared for it, young people. Like, really prepared for it. Dad's not going to give you the keys to the car till you can learn to drive. We've got to be prepared. Today's the way of preparation. And don't get worried about it, that you're caught up in this great big collective movement. The preparation that God has got for each of you individually is very, what's the word for it? It's like custom made for you individually. And it's supervised by Him, and it's special. Just for you. And you've got to go through a whole different set of scenarios and experiences in your life than maybe somebody else. But that's okay. If you believe you're on the path and you're on the right way to immortality. And you trust in the Father, because He is directing your path. He's reached down and He said to each of you individually, I love you so much. I want to save you. Won't you let me do it? And we struggle and we fight and we kick and carry on as if we don't have any vision of what God has prepared for us. And these are the things which were revealed right here to Moses. There's a special basis and a special criteria and training which is taking place right now in all of our lives to get us to immortality. And when God revealed to him that character, He was showing him a new direction, a new way. That was the way of life which God wants us all to walk. And if we get set on that way and we walk that way, and in our life we learn to be long-suffering and we learn to be merciful and we learn to be gracious and we learn to be forgiving and we learn to love and emulate goodness and truth, it is inescapable we are going to end up with an indestructible body of immortality. How are we going to use those powers, young people? How are we going to use those powers in the kingdom? You want them? You want God to give them to you? How are you going to use them? And it's a question we've got to ask ourselves. Now, just have a quick flick over to Acts chapter 9, because this is what we've all inherited. We all know that we've inherited this way. Before we even get there, what's the ecclesia called in the Acts? Does anyone know? The way. Straight out of Exodus 33 and 34, that's what they're called, the way. Saul breathing out threatenings and slaughterings like this wild animal, persecuting Acts 9 verse 2, desired of him letters to Damascus, to the synagogues, that if he found any of this way. And if you wanted to look up in your spare time, Acts 19, Acts 18, Acts 22, 23 and Acts 24, you'll find it keeps reiterating. It's a way of life that we're going on. It's a way of life which we've all engaged in. Do you think the world knows this way? Does the world understand the way which we're walking? No, they don't understand it at all. They are ignorant of this way. You're going to get to work on Monday and the world's going to say, that's ridiculous. You're going the wrong way. You're not going to get anywhere like that. And we say, no. Seriously. Say this to your workmates, your uni mates. You should too. If I stay on this way, and I try my hardest, and I pray to my God, who I believe is helping me, I will end up with a body of immortality, and I'm going to live forever. And they're going to laugh at you. They're going to think you're a complete idiot. No, you've got to go our way. I've got another way I want to show you. That's what they'll say. See, they don't accept us and they don't understand us. Do they, young people? But they sure as heck notice us. If you lead a life like Christ, you get noticed. You're like a nail sticking up. They don't like it. Bang. They say they love variety and they celebrate difference. But that is rubbish. They want everybody to be just like them. Just the same. Everybody's got to be just the same. I mean, let me break it down for you, okay? I hate to have to tell you this, because I don't mean to be disparaging anyway, because many of you may be going through these type of problems. Many of you may be sitting out there thinking, I've only got two ways to choose from. You should be feeling privileged, because other people out there in the world only got one way. They don't even have a choice. They're swept up in this current of the broad way and they don't even have a choice. God says, here's two doors you could choose. And we've got a choice which way we could go. And some of us think the way, the broad way which they're going out there is going to be great. So fun. You're right. You'll have a wow of a time out there. It is unbelievable, stimulating, exciting fun. Gone like that. You will have a good time, but it'll be all over before you know it. Just like a ride at the show or ride at, you know, one of those theme parks. You get on, you pay money, boom, 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 boom. Oh, you get off, wow, that was a ride. And it's all over. That's a whole life just there. So you're 16 years old, young people, out there, their way, and you start to realise, hey, there's girls out there, probably younger than that these days. So you start to involve yourself, which all your mates are doing, and you're comforted by that, with immorality. And you're going out to parties and you're just having the best time of your life. You're getting drunk, you might even try some drugs. And you feel shocking the next morning as you're just bringing it all up and you can't remember what happened last night, but your mate's patting you on the back going, wasn't it so good? And you say, as you wipe all that disgusting garbage off your mouth, yeah, it must be good. I mean, everyone's doing it. It's great, isn't it? We're all going the same way. It's, you know, fellowship, fellow feeling. It happens, young people. But my mates from school, you tire of that party scene. Believe it or not, you do. About 25 years old sets in. It's, you know, you're not that excited by it anymore. You can't be bothered. You want to just stay home. You want to kick back. Have a few quiet drinks. Your friends. And you think to yourself by about 25, because you think, where am I going? You think to yourself by about 25, I'm heading the sun, but my mate's getting a steady relationship. Maybe I should too. So you do. You get a girlfriend, and you do, so you do. You get a girlfriend, and you start going out, you've been going for 2 years now. You're not going to get married, I mean, that's old school stuff. You sort of let it go for a bit, and you have a couple of kids together, and then you break up. That's what happens out there. You go through all that trauma, and it's terrible, but at least everybody else is going through it too. I mean, that's the way we live. And anyway, it's not natural to stay with one person, is it? Out there? Of course it's not. Life goes on a bit further. You're into your 30s now, on the way that they travel. And you think, oh, I'm getting lonely. It's hard raising kids by myself. So you get another girlfriend. She's got two kids. It's great anyway, because this is really special. Because now you have a child together. You can read the stats. That relationship is more likely to break up than the first one. Now, that's a fact. But do you think, oh, well, this has got to be okay, because, heck, everyone's doing it. And guess what? If you got a lot of money, does it save you from all that heartache out there? I mean, I don't know if you guys even know these people. I mean, everyone else seems to be, you know, vicariously living their lives through them. Like, you know, Tom and Nicole? Are they still together? Come on, own up. Are they still together? No, no, no. We've got Tomcat now. Who's the other ones I was thinking of before? Like, I didn't know if you guys knew these people, but Brad Pitt and Jennifer. Are they still together? Well, what have we got now? Now, Brangelina. And they present this, like, all these people that read these magazines are saying, I want to be like them. They've got something. They haven't got anything. And there's one person I thought I could really count on is Madonna. That cabana-obsessed idiot. She has just checked out of her marriage too. Now, hold on. But I thought if you had everything, they ask kids your age. 80% of them say, I want to be famous and rich when I grow up. But I don't understand the, you know, it's all to me, it seems overrated because they don't seem to be content and happy. Do they? And money doesn't seem to be buying them anything but experiences and material things. Money hasn't yet, as far as I know, bought them the things that God places value on, like loyalty and relationships and love and grace. See, that's the way we should be going. And even if you think, oh, you're being dramatic, Matt, because out there, I know lots of people, I don't really know lots of people, young people, that are really content I don't know many of them. We got our next door neighbours. They're an old couple, been together like forever. I don't know how long, but they're there. And they seem happy. They seem happy. But you know what one common denominator is that makes them all the same? Does anyone know what it is? Even the ones that seem happy for a of time. That's it. They are all on the one road, the one way to oblivion. They are all inevitably going to die. One day they're going to attend. I heard you had a funeral the other day. They're all going to be an attendee at a funeral, not as mourners, but in that casket, in that coffin, one day. And that just levels them out. They're going to make, it's going to make them all the same. Young people, I want you to understand it. That way out there is not fun for very long. It doesn't give you any satisfaction. There's no precision in it. There's no beauty. There's no power in a hole in the ground. And that's all they get in the end. But we're not like that. God shielded us from that. In fact, if you're baptized in Christ, I am the way, and you are on that path, do you know that you are already indestructible? In fact, if you seem to die like they all do out there, God says, mm-mm. He or she, my son or daughter, is not dead at all. In fact, they're only sleeping. Because I'm not the God of the dead, I'm the God of the living. You know that. God does not count you as being dead. Now that is powerful. And one day he's going to come up to your grave, if you happen to die, and he's going to wake you up and say, son, daughter, wake up. It's time to get up. Come on, let's go. You think about that, young people. That is so powerful. There's their way, one way, ends in the dead end street, and they're all careening down that hill going as fast as they can, and they can't get off that track. And we sit here with all this before us, and we ask ourselves, you think, oh, you know, I'd like to go that way. Looks like fun. In this environment here, it's easy to capture the picture and perspective and say, no, I don't want to go that way. You know, set yourself up, young people, for Monday morning when they all say, you're an idiot, come with us. So try and think about some of those principles. Now, I don't really know. What time am I sort of meant to sit down? Like 1:45? Is that too much for you? If I say 1:45, you'll think, yeah, good, he's only going to 1:45, and then I can, you know, snavel a bit there at the end. Now, you've got to keep telling yourself, this is important, okay? We must keep telling ourselves that we're on the right way. Now, is anyone out there, just hand up, who believe that affirmations are pretty good? Now, I believe they are. They're good, all right? Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He told himself that. He wasn't just telling other people. He's reaffirming it to himself. Hey, young people, we haven't got time this evening. In case you think, you know, what we're going to put up next is, you know, it's a little bit new age, just it's a bit unbiblical. It's not at all. I could talk to you about the way of Cain out of Jude and 2 Peter, the way of Balaam. And we could go and turn up the quote where Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Or Isaiah 35, it talks about the way of holiness, the highway for God. We could talk about the way of the tree of life. It's not necessary. We understand. It's not necessary. We understand all that, don't we? We know those quotations. But we forget sometimes to motivate ourselves to stay in the way. So I think this is the next one, Phil. So, okay. Just calm down. Just calm down. And say that affirmation to ourselves, young people. I'm on my way to an indestructible, dynamic body of life. Say it. And actually believe it out loud. Okay, Phil. So I just thought these up in 5 minutes. You can think it beyond. But it helps. Monday morning, they're going to be just, you're going to be besieged from every side, and people are going to be trying to take you down. What are you going to say to yourself? Next one, Phil. breaks my heart, young people, but that's serious. It's serious stuff. Just put the next one up, Phil, because it's all the scriptural quotations if you're taking notes, okay? This is so important. And even... Yeah, okay, you can put them up. Put them up. There you are. So they're all there. And that's important to know that, young people. But even when we die, where's your name go? And this is funny because this is, you know, this is one of Michael Ashton's old... next one. I don't know what Simon was doing here. So you go in the Lampstand magazine, just one click, and this is what happens, you know. You die and Sister Bertha Reynolds has fallen asleep in Christ. And you get the idea in the next phrase that maybe they wanted her to go because she was in the way for 56 years. You'd even laugh at that. It's just such an old Christadelphian joke. But, you know, it's great about... Here's the secret. Write this one down. Secret to getting immortality. Stay in the way. Never get out of the way for anybody. Never move. Never, ever, once, ever move, young people. Stay in the way. That's important. So we know these principles. There's nothing new about that. We keep asking ourselves, how are we going to use this power when we get to the kingdom? I'll tell you how we're going to use them. You know what God's entrusted you with today, young people? He's entrusted you with a few powers. What sort of powers have you got today?
Knowledge,
yeah. What have you got, Nolsey? You got eyesight? What else we got? Our hearing. We can walk. We can talk. What do you do with these powers God's given you? I mean, He's only entrusted to us a few powers. Are these powers that God has given us governed by that character, that way of life which we're talking about? Ask yourself that question. Am I doing all I can for the truth? Because using the small powers that He's committed to you now, He will commit to you those awesome, massive powers of immortality in the future. You're not going to get them if you're not preparing yourself and governing the qualities that you have now by those incredible characteristics of God. It wouldn't be right. It'd be like giving a machine gun to a monkey. Who is going to entrust me if I'm unprepared and unsuitable and completely irresponsible with the incredible powers of immortality? Nobody is. Adam and Eve had taken the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And God said, get out of the garden, lest they take of the tree of life. They were not ready. They weren't ready at that time. Question, if in the early days of Elijah, God gave him those incredible powers, what do you think he would have done with those powers? Would he have forgiven Israel? He would have annihilated Israel. He wasn't ready for them. He's ready for them now. And that's what God is actually doing with us today. James and John. Do you know when they said, Lord, command fire, like he comes to the Samaritan city, command fire to come down from heaven so that they may be consumed, like Elijah did. You don't know what spirit you're of. I'm not here to destroy. I'm not using this incredible power to destroy men's lives. I want to save them. Do you know when that happened, young people? That happened straight after that incredible vision of the transfiguration, when they heard that still, small whisper, this is my beloved son, listen to him. And the next day, straight, just like Elijah, they said, right, fry him. They still didn't get it. See, it's a hard thing to learn to use our powers now to save people. But young people, you imagine, you're going to be in the kingdom one day. I believe that. I believe that we are all going to be in the kingdom. And you've got to believe it too. Now, the world needs a shaking up because at the moment, psychologically, mate, they are out of reach. Completely out of reach. And they need to suffer a massive train wreck. Like the sort that a lot of going to be in the kingdom one day. I believe that. I believe that we are all going to be in the kingdom. And you've got to believe it too. Now, the world needs a shaking up, because at the moment, psychologically, mate, they are out of reach. Completely out of reach. And they need to suffer a massive train wreck, like the sort that Elijah would bring upon them. But that won't change them. That's a softening up process. That'll just get their attention. And then maybe they might listen. And that's what these wars are going to do to the world. They're going to absolutely devastate probably a lot of infrastructure, probably to the point where there's maybe a lot of people and families and society and communities actually die. And you have actually felt the power of God rush through you, and now you're immortal. And you walk in to these towns as they are asking themselves, what are we going to do? Where are we going to turn to? We've inherited lies. This way that we're going all our life, look where it's got us. I can't believe we've ended up here. And they're going to be looking for answers. In we walk. And we're going to be wearing nice, clean clothes. And our clean clothes are going to be representative of the way that we've walked all our life. And there's the end product. And we're going to look at them in their shabby, grubby clothes. And the disparity is going to be so obvious. And they're going to look at you or me, and they're going to say, you're dressed like a king. You're dressed like a queen. How'd you get that? Tell me, how did you get it? Well, I want that. Can you show me the way to get it? Imagine if they come and you go back to, I don't know, wherever it is you've come from, maybe the areas that you've locally known today, and you walk back in and they say to you, why didn't you tell me all this was going to happen? I didn't know all this. Did you know all this was going to happen? And you're looking around, well, I did. We've got the chance Monday morning, young people. Our life is all about trying to show other people out there the new way, a better way, a healthier way, a life which is really all about living, a life which, if we embark on, it's the best chance of having a satisfying, contented, fulfilling life. Show them the way. Don't worry if they laugh at you. Use all the enthusiasm of this week, Monday morning, and tell them. Find an opportunity. Pray for an opportunity. God will give you an opportunity if you pray for it. And take it with both hands and say, righto, I'm going to get it all out. I'm going to look like a fool, but I'm going to try and get it all out. Big things are going to happen. Christ's going to come back to the earth. Russia's going to come. They're going to smash. There's going to be wars everywhere. Tsunamis, earthquakes. All this crazy stuff's going to happen. Elijah's going to go out and try and get Israel back. I learned it all last week, but it's going to happen. I tell you, if one day you try and call me, I'm not here. It's because I've been taken away by Lord Jesus Christ. But I've left some pamphlets there so you know all about it, okay? It's all there. And I only took about 30 seconds to say that. Just get it out. At least you can say, I got it out. Because in my life, I hate it. I think, how many people, if they do survive the wars, how many people are going to say to me, Matt, you never said a word? Not a word. I didn't know you believed in all this stuff. So I don't want that to happen anymore in my life. I don't want it to happen in your life, young people. But you've got to make a mental decision, draw a line in the sand this evening and say, you know, next week, going to be different from now on. And you've got to make that decision. It's such a powerful thing. So, in we walk, as we said. Okay, I think it's next, please, Phil. Yeah, okay, we'll whack the rest of them up. So, here we are. There's just some qualities or some characteristics of immortality. You may have seen this before. Here's the question, okay? How are we going to use these virtues in immortality, now that you've got them? And people, when you go into these cities and towns and they race out ready to listen, are you going to, like James and John, smite and want to kill people? Or are you going to have this mentality which you've developed today, that you want to save people? Just think about how could you use those. See this here, where is it? Perception of thoughts. Imagine knowing what people think. That's what I want to know about my mate. What's he thinking? What is his fears and his problems? Like, out of all the zillions of things you could say, this is, at this time, in this place, the right thing. Imagine that. That's how you could use immortality. And I don't know, you've thought about, that's Acts 8, this faculty of movement, to be able to be in one place and then immediately in another place. With Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch, you know, he's caught away at the end and he was found, you know, 20 or 30 k's down the road. But how did that happen? And even 20 or 30 k's, we think, it's not very much, but wherever God is to here, I guess it's a fair way for Gabriel to be sent to Daniel, isn't it? At least, unless it's on some other plane which we can't even understand. But how would you use that in the kingdom? Imagine that type of power as you get sent back to, I don't know, who's from Adelaide? I mean, it's a depressing thought, but... Now, that's bad. I shouldn't even say that. But it is. Imagine getting sent back to Adelaide, to the people you know, the locality maybe that you grew up. I don't know how it's all going to work, but you go back there. Every day, you're helping out. It's not invisibility anymore, though that's, you know, that's an exciting thought to have. But you're amongst them, a voice right there teaching the nations. You've got to see yourself there, young people. You can't just blasé walk around today in this life and you're looking at the big Broadway with this glitzy lifestyle and think, and unless you have a really vivid picture of where you'll be and who you'll talk to and what you will say, it's going to be hard to keep on that track, on that way. So at night time, after your locality has quietened down and all the mortals are asleep, like a few of you here, I don't want to wake anybody, so they're just sleeping nicely, and all of a sudden you're just going back to Jerusalem, to the temple. Just imagine that night, like I think it's quite funny because Brother Robert's in his final consolation. He has us in little booths at night in the kingdom, standing sometimes, pacing, sitting, reading Elps Israel or something. I don't know, that's not my vision, sitting in a little booth for the entire night. But if you're immortal and you want to sit in a booth, you're back in the temple, young people. And just imagine, you are in the temple in the presence of Christ. And tonight you may imagine you are in the temple in the presence of Christ. And tonight you may have arranged some sort of a meeting with, like for me, it would be the Apostle John. I want him to take me through. I want a full replay of Revelation as he saw it, and for him to talk me through it and how he understood and what parts of it he could see, and the symbols that he knew, and how he felt. Imagine that in immortality. There are many things. If you sat there, young people, this evening before you go to bed, and just, you've written them down, just go through them and think, one day I'm going to get this. I'm going to be in the kingdom. I'm going to use this power. God's going to entrust it to me. I'm going to get a lot of people to the kingdom to take on Christ. But what are you doing about it now? Ask yourself those questions. What am I doing about it now? And am I on that way? So we'll just summarize. Are there any questions, by the way? I don't care if you ask me any questions. Go for it. I'll just check to see if I've forgotten anything. I don't know, it just sounded good, so I thought I'd put it in there. Balaam. I know, but if you had the sword, if you had the, like, you know what Balaam said, right? The donkey falls under and he's going, he's kicking the insides out of this poor donkey. He's so frustrated. All he can see is he's got kaleidoscope eyes. He's looking at the dollar signs and he's going for it. And God had already said to him, don't go unless they call you. They didn't call him and off he goes. Right, so you get to the end of the story. He's right there, and he says, if I had a sword in my hand, I'd kill you. And the angel's standing, invisible, behind Balaam, with a sword in his hand. Now, I'll just take the sword and put it in your hand. What would you do? In your hand. What would you do? For what? I'd kill him. Straight away. Boom! I know exactly what you're thinking, Balaam. He wouldn't have got a second chance. But the angel could see further than what I could ever see and had control over that. He doesn't agree. There's nothing worse than having an argument on stage, okay? I think it's inappropriate. So we'll talk about it later. But do you not think you'll have masterly control over your emotions as an immortal?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that quote didn't prove that's good. Think of another one. How would you have liked to have control when you had that argument with your best friend and you said those words that you've said them? You'll be able to have that control in the kingdom. And when somebody really gets you riled, you won't say the things that you might have said as a mortal. So we'll just summarise, okay? Phil, please. And think about it. Mortality. Oh, yeah, okay, I forgot about this. Have a look at this. This is really interesting. I try to explain to you eternity, and I don't have the words to do it. This is some Swiss proverb, I think. I'll just read it out. Way up north in the earth, there stands a rock. It's 100 kilometres high and 100 kilometres wide. Once every 1,000 years, a little bird comes to the rock to sharpen its beak. When the rock by that process has been worn away, then a single day of eternity will have gone by. I don't know, that's just like... Psh. When God created time, young people... I know a lot of you, it's, take your time, it's okay. When God created time, he created a lot of time. But to get the full benefits of time, you really want to be living for more than 70 years, you know what I'm saying? You want to live forever to get the full benefits of God's creation of time. We want to be there in the kingdom, young people. We've only just, Phil, just caught a glimpse tonight. I don't even know how to explain it to you sometimes. We've got to make sure we're on the way. So we're limited today. Immortality is not limited, young people. We've looked at it. There's only one way. Just one, which will end up on the road in a destination that is vibrant and happy and immortal. And it's a narrow way. How come there's not many people on the narrow way? What does Matthew 7 say? How come there's not many people on the narrow way, young people? It's hard to find. Why? Because everyone's saying, look at this. This, you know, 28-lane highway. Woof, everybody's on it. This, you know, 28-lane highway. Woof, everybody's on it. It's obvious. You think it's got to be the right way. And who bothers looking for another way? We are so blessed to have found it. And we are on that way. Stay on that way, young people. Just never, ever, ever move out of that way. Tell yourself, I'm staying put. Anyone ever had one of their friends leave the truth? Like, it breaks your heart. They're going a completely different way. They didn't grasp the perspective of immortality. I don't know why. Maybe you didn't try hard enough with them. I've had friends that left the truth. Maybe I didn't try hard enough with them. There's still time to get them back in the way. Now, what else have we talked about? Yeah, that's what the world thinks of us. They laugh at us. They think we're going nowhere. But we know exactly where we're going. That's a powerful thing. When somebody tells you you're a fool for being religious, and the God you worship, the Christian God, is nothing, settle yourself and think, I know exactly where I'm going. That's an important thing to know, young people. So that we're being prepared today for immortal powers and can't remember what's next. Stay put. And there you go. That's what our job is today. Our job for 1,000 years is going to be no different. After that, who knows? Who knows? It's an amazing concept to think about. All we know is this, young people, that Christ is coming back soon. I know that's a fact. I don't know if you know it, but you think about it. A lot of brothers and sisters have been saying for a long time that Christ is coming back soon. It's going to happen soon. And that's a fact. And he will be here, and the kingdom will begin with or without you. And you have this incredible privilege this week. We've learnt the things that Elijah learnt about the true things that change people's lives, coming along beside somebody and loving them and really caring for them, saying, this is the way we've got to go. Moses learnt it. And we've got to stay in that way. One day it's going to happen. This war is going to be completely over. We're going to be in the kingdom. The glory is going to be immense in us. God's going to take us away from this dimness, and we will find rest under the shadow of God forever and ever and ever. It's worth thinking about, young people. Are there any questions just before we finish up? Good stuff.